Deb Zaro wasn't familiar with citizen science, but the regional administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency soon found out using individuals as observers goes back a century. In this installment of this week's special series, Citizen Science at the EPA, Zaro explains how citizens' observations need to become more accurate if they're going to be used to affect regulations or public policy.
Citizen science is a great thing. It allows citizens to go out and collect their own data, to make observations, and to advocate for their own public health. They have concerns, just like all of us, in where they live, work, and play, and it allows them to go out and collect data, to advocate for their public health, and to help EPA do its job by better collecting data and more cheaply and timely. So it's a great benefit and a win-win to both the public and the federal government.
Do people need to be actual scientists to engage in citizen science?
Not at all. There's all levels of citizen scientists. We start at the basic, actually, in school, in elementary school, and we do environmental education, and kids can go out and learn about their environment, and it goes all the way through actually collecting data, air, water, monitoring data that you want to change a policy in your town or with the state or with the federal government. So it has a whole range of potential uses and users.
Now, when you were the Region 2 Deputy Administrator for Science, you got started in this. Tell us how a program begins. What does it take to get one started?
Yeah, it's really interesting. When I started with this, citizen science wasn't too well-known. It was about 6 years ago. And the first thing I did was research it. And I looked around and I found out that it has existed for over 100 years. The Audubon Christmas Bird Count has been around 100 years documenting how bird migration has changed due to climate changes and everything else. And I said, well, okay, so it's not that new. And it wasn't new to EPA either. We had a volunteer water monitoring program for the last 30 years. So people were out collecting water samples. What was different was people wanted to actually go out and advocate and make regulatory changes based on this data. So it was a different mindset. You needed different quality data for different uses. So I went out and I had no idea who was doing this and what they were doing. And I did a whole bunch of information interviews with non-governmental organizations, with community groups, EJ groups, with academics to find out the lay of the land and see where things were. And from that, we developed a series of workshops and trainings to address the citizen scientists' needs.
Now, if you were counting birds, you need binoculars and you have to walk around. But water quality and air quality, there's data there that you mentioned, but you can't really just get that data by eye and ear and nose observation.
That would be a really bad thing to do, you know, because it's a public health issue. So, no, we wouldn't do that. We have test kits and equipment that we can loan out to citizen scientists for water monitoring. And as Marie O'Shea will talk about and Ron Williams, there's actually a lot of work being done on air sensors because that's the new wave of the future. And what you have is you have a whole revolution with smartphones and crowdsourcing and all these people who are connected in ways that we never imagined before. With the right tools, they can go out there and they can be a force to be reckoned with for wanting change to improve their environment and their health.
So how could this work? Let's just make up an example of a river. And a river's long, and there's different things along the river, factories maybe, or communities, or places where there's just woods. So would it be possible to deploy, say, a string of citizen scientists to sample the water, the length of a river, and could that data be gathered in some way and combined such that you could get a picture of the whole river by zone?
Yeah, you actually could do that. I think we have a lot of really great watershed groups and river watch groups that go out and they actually sample their rivers. They care very deeply about it, these citizens. And they go out and sample them for all different kinds of parameters, for water quality parameters, you know, dissolved oxygen, pH, temperature. They go out and look at bacteria because a lot of times you might have fecal contamination coming in where people are swimming and boating. So, yeah, they go down. I think the biggest issue that we face, though, is the aggregation of the data sets. So they're all independently generated. And right now, one of the things we're struggling with is where do all the data go? And how does the public have access to all the various data sets? And that's a huge issue. They call it big data. And we don't have one solution for that yet. We're still working on it.
Well, let's continue that example. So someone gets a water sample and there's stuff in it. I mean, I used to look as a kid through a microscope at water samples from the pond nearby, and I saw all kinds of little things swimming around in the water, microscopic organisms, but I didn't know what they are. And so what form does the data have to take such that, say, a local water administrator or the EPA itself can use the data? What do people submit?
Yeah, it has to be good quality. If you want regulatory action from EPA or state agency, it needs to be good quality data. And that's a little bit different use than what you would use for environmental education, okay? Because that's stewardship. But if you want a policy-driven action, then you need really good quality data. So what we did in Region 2 is we developed an equipment loan program where we standardized what equipment folks would use. We purchased it, and then we trained them how to use the equipment, and we standardized everything to make it as easy as possible so that they could then go out and collect the data that they wanted and not have to invest in the equipment, not have to worry about the quality of the data because we put all the spreadsheets together and everything so we would know it was good quality data, and so would they. And we got our state regulators to actually use the data, and that was pretty amazing. That was where EPA had a paradigm shift with citizen science.
We're speaking with Deb Zaro. She's Deputy Regional Administrator for the New England area for the EPA. And so this is not necessarily collected for the EPA. It could be collected for a town or a city or a county also.
Yep. It could be collected for anybody. It could be we could be funding it, and that would be great. We'd love to have the money to fund lots of things. It could be groups that are just interested in it. It could be the state out there that's doing a survey, or a local government or a non-governmental entity. It could be an academic organization. There's lots of people out there collecting data about the environment, whether it's water, air, soil, just to see what's going on and what we're being exposed to.
And any good stories about what people might have discovered?
I think the biggest thing was with in New York and New Jersey was with combined sewer overflows. So we've done a long and strong process to get rid of fecal contamination coming out of wastewater treatment plants, being mixed with stormwater and coming into our riverways where we swim and we boat. So I think identifying after a storm when there's a big onslaught of bacteria into the river so that you can tell people proactively, don't go in that river or don't go in that ocean right now because you're going to be exposed to bacteria and other organisms that you don't want to get sick from, right? That's the bottom line.
And sometimes, you know, over the years, people have suspected the very air they breathe. I imagine this kind of program, if people want to get equipment or get guidance from EPA on what equipment to use, maybe some things can be disproved as well as found.
Absolutely. We have one great example that Pat's going to talk about up at Tonawanda-Coke in New York, and that's kind of the start of citizen science for us, where people were concerned about their exposure to benzene from the industrial sources. And they actually went out and did a bucket brigade air sampling, and that led to a state enforcement action, to a federal enforcement action, and people went to jail, fines were paid, and restitution for that community. And it was an impoverished community up in upstate New York. So yeah, it can make a big difference. And what we've seen is in the inner cities, especially, you know, truck traffic and exposure of kids in urban environments to diesel and particulate matter is of strong concern to community groups, to parents, and the high rate of asthma in those communities is directly linked to those pollutants. So they want to know what they're being exposed to.
So if you suspect or think there might be a range of pollutants or you just want to see what's out there, does it take lots of instruments? Because one might be sensitive to benzene, another one might be sensitive to diesel fumes.
It does. It takes a range of instruments right now. You have different contaminants that have different processes and procedures that have to be measured. We're pretty good with the water arena. The air arena is relatively new, where we're developing sensors and moving forward and having reliable, cost-effective sensors. We're not quite there yet. We have a lot of do-it-yourself people out there generating sensors and making claims, but those claims are not substantiated. And I think you'll hear from Ron Williams about what the sensors can really do and where EPA is going to help support the development and the validation of those sensors.
So having had the citizen loan program, how has it worked out? Has the equipment come back in good condition? And did it result in good data from the loaned people in the water?
Yeah, the equipment loan program is a really big success. The equipment comes back in great shape. People want to use it again and again. The data have been usable. They've been high-quality data because they've been trained, and they really care about those water bodies, so they want to be able to have their data be used by regulators to make decisions and not just push to the side and said, oh, this is citizen science data. Because you don't need to be a PhD or a national expert to generate good quality data. You can go out there and be trained and care about your community and your watershed and your area and generate data. And people do it every day.
So are you now the go-to person in EPA for all of this?
I seem to be. I don't know how that happened, but I seem to be. You know, I switched jobs and moved up to EPA New England, and I still seem to be talking about citizen science. And I actually have a really good example, if you'd like to hear it.
I'd love to.
In EPA New England. So one of the big things we're dealing with are cyanobacteria blooms. They're algal blooms caused by nutrients.
And are they bluish? Is that why they're called cyano?
That's right. Blue-green. Exactly. And what happens is there's high precipitation events and increased land use issues that come up, and so you get a lot of nutrients, and they cause these blooms, and these blooms have cyanobacteria in them, and they have toxins, some of them. And the toxins kill people. They kill pets. They kill wildlife. If you swim in them and ingest them, they can kill people. They can impact drinking water sources. So we have a brand new cyanobacteria bloom watch program. And what we did is we put an equipment loan program in place with all of our partners. We didn't do it this alone. And they can now go out and take a little mini microscope with an iPhone and go out and take pictures of the bloom and send it to a central database where it can be interpreted to see if it's toxic or not. And we've also developing a crowdsourcing app so that folks can go out and identify where there is a bloom, and people can go out and sample it to see whether or not it's toxic. So citizen science is happening all over the country.
Deb Zaro is the EPA's Deputy Regional Administrator for New England. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. In the next hour, we'll hear from research chemist Ron Williams and how he's helping develop accurate and inexpensive air monitoring devices to put into citizens' hands.